Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
As the world's largest network of remote professionals, we're here to help. Upwork is giving $1 million in talent grants to projects that counter the ongoing impacts of COVID-19. By connecting existing teams with independent experts in tech, creative, and operations to help save lives, to support communities, and rebuild the economy. Go to upwork.com/worktogether to learn more.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. I'm Jackie Leonard, and in the early hours of Wednesday, the 13th of May, these are our main stories. The leading US infectious disease expert has told a Senate committee that a premature easing of coronavirus restrictions could lead to needless deaths. The British government is extending its coronavirus job retention scheme until October, but businesses will be asked to pick up some of the costs. And President Ashraf Ghani has ordered his security forces to resume offensive operations against the Taliban and other Islamist groups after another day of bloodshed in Afghanistan. Also in this podcast.
These are A-list stars. You've got people like Rod Stewart, Lil Nas X, Robert De Niro, Lady Gaga, Madonna.
A New York law firm acting for a string of stars says hackers have stolen vast amounts of documents and are demanding ransom. More than 82,000 people are known to have died with coronavirus in the US. But there is still political pressure to ease the restrictions that have seen a huge surge in unemployment. Now the country's leading expert on infectious diseases, Anthony Fauci, is urging caution. Testifying at a Senate committee hearing over the administration's handling of the coronavirus, he warned that early lifting of restrictions could lead to new outbreaks.
If some areas, cities, states, or what have you, jump over those various checkpoints and prematurely open up without having the capability of being able to respond effectively and efficiently, my concern is that we will start to see little spikes that might turn into outbreaks. So therefore, I have been being very clear in my message to try to the best extent possible to go by the guidelines, which have been very well thought out and very well delineated.
So will this advice make it harder for President Trump to insist on a relaxation of restrictions? A question for our correspondent in Washington, Gary O'Donoghue.
Well, his message and his tone is certainly at odds with that of the president, isn't it? There's no question about that. He's sticking to these federal guidelines, and one of the key federal guidelines, of course, is you have to have 2 weeks of falling case numbers before you even move into the initial stage. And that hasn't happened for many of these states that are doing it. But yet the president is encouraging them to do that. So that's one thing. But also, I think, to say, to sort of move into the president's area and say things like, you know, there could be an economic downturn if we have to have if there's another outbreak, an uncontrollable outbreak. I think the president won't like that one little bit.
Now, this was a Senate committee. He wasn't permitted to speak to the House of Representatives, was he?
No, and that's a simple political decision in the sense that the Democrats control the House of Representatives, the Republicans control the Senate, therefore you control the chairs, control the committees as well in the respective parties. So he was allowed to go along today. There were a few moments where it got a bit testy. I think one senator was trying to suggest that perhaps Dr. Fauci was being a bit of a gloom monger. And he was also pressed on whether or not he agreed with the president about President Obama being responsible for a lack of vaccines, which the president has said in the past. He said he didn't believe that. But, you know, I mean, this is the scientist, and he's become embroiled in the politics, I'm afraid. That, you know, doesn't normally end well when it concerns President Trump.
That was Gary O'Donoghue in Washington. The US Supreme Court has begun hearing a series of cases linked to President Trump's efforts to keep his tax returns secret. Donald Trump is the first US head of state since Richard Nixon to refuse to disclose the records, claiming he has legal immunity. That has been contested by Democrat-led congressional committees. The Supreme Court is expected to rule on the matter before elections in November. The World Health Organization has said the countries with the worst outbreaks of coronavirus are the ones which didn't listen to its initial warnings. It was commenting on the situation in the United States and Brazil, whose leaders first sought to play down the threat of COVID-19, then later criticized the WHO's handling of the pandemic. Katie Watson in Sao Paulo was asked why the figures in Brazil were so high.
In its defense, it is the largest country in South America. It's more than 200 million population. But there are also some political issues that perhaps we've heard about in the past. Jair Bolsonaro, the president, has been very vocal in criticizing the drastic measures that state governors have brought in to try and curb the spread of the virus. So, for example, here in Sao Paulo, there's a quarantine. People are generally told to stay indoors. Other parts of the country, there have been much tougher lockdowns. But Jair Bolsonaro has been very critical of these measures and has also fired his health minister because he didn't believe in the importance of social distancing. So all of these elements together really add confusion for people to understand what they should be doing. Should they be staying? Should they be going back to work? And I don't think that has been at all helpful in trying to curb the spread of the virus here in Brazil.
That was Katie Watson in Sao Paulo. The fear in many countries under lockdown is that if it lasts too long, whole swathes of jobs will be lost forever. So governments have been spending billions of dollars to pay people temporarily laid off or furloughed by their companies. Britain says it's extending its scheme to subsidise salaries until the end of October. Here's the Finance Minister, Rishi Sunak.
This scheme has been a world-leading economic intervention, supporting livelihoods and protecting futures. 7.5 million jobs have been furloughed. Jobs we could have lost if we had not acted. Nearly 1 million businesses supported who could have closed shop for good. And as we reopen the economy, we will need to support people back to work.
Our UK correspondent Rob Watson told us more about what's being promised.
The promise is to keep this scheme going longer, perhaps, than some people had feared. So it'll go on in its current form until the end of July, but it will actually carry on in some form or another until the end of October. And it's worth pointing out, Jackie, this is surely one of the most extraordinary economic interventions by any British government ever. I mean, nearly a quarter of the workforce in the UK are now, if you like, on the government's payroll. It's costing something like $20 billion a month, which is, of course, about what the UK government spends on healthcare and caring for the elderly.
It is extraordinary, but how popular is this scheme? Because some are very worried about the cost of it, aren't they?
It's hugely popular with the majority of economists. They think to do otherwise would be really, really foolhardy. It's popular with businesses and it's popular with most employees, although obviously most of them would prefer to be at work on full wages. I mean, I think the only criticism really comes from what you might call the, I guess, the right of the governing Conservative Party, where some look at that cost, the £14 billion, $20 billion a month, and feel it's eye-watering. And they also feel it's a sort of disincentive for people to go back to work and to businesses too. But I think they're in the minority.
Now, looking at the official number of people who have lost their lives with COVID-19, that continues to be below what its peak was, but there are still mixed opinions about the overall number of deaths, aren't there?
Yes, there are, although I think it's pretty clear that the government's official figures understate it, and not necessarily in a sinister way, because what the government measures, and if we look at today's figure, I think it's 32,600, they're measuring people where they've actually tested positive for the virus, but it's thought that at least 36,000 or more COVID is written on their death certificate as maybe having played a part. But the reason why even that might be an underestimate, Jackie, is because there have been over 50,000 excess deaths over the last few months. And so that would make you think, well, hang on a minute, presumably some of those excess deaths are from COVID.
That was Rob Watson. Staying in the UK, and British Transport Police are investigating the death of a railway worker who was infected with coronavirus after being spat at while on duty. Belly Mujinga was working as a ticket officer at Victoria Station in London. She became ill within days and died on the 5th of April. The British Prime Minister's spokesperson called the attack despicable. Here's our correspondent, Sangeeta Maiska.
Belly Mujinga and a colleague were on the concourse of Victoria Station helping passengers with ticket inquiries when a member of the public spat and coughed on them, telling them he had coronavirus. Within days, both railway workers fell ill with COVID-19. Belly Mujinga, who was 47 years old, had an underlying respiratory condition. She was admitted to hospital and put on a ventilator, but Miss Mujinga died just 14 days after the incident. Her husband, Lusamba Gode Katale, told the BBC that he and the couple's 11-year-old daughter were devastated by the death. She was a good person, a good mother and a good wife, he said. She was his whole world. The Transport Salaried Staffs Association, the union that represented Miss Mujinga, cautioned the government not to ease lockdown too quickly. It also called on rail companies to withdraw vulnerable staff from frontline roles. British Transport Police are investigating the incident on the 22nd of March and are asking for witnesses to contact them.
That was Sangeeta Maiska. Now let's take a look at the impact of COVID-19 on a group of people long marginalised and often forced to live in insanitary conditions with few resources and access to welfare and health, the Roma of Eastern and Central Europe. Little surprise then that the pandemic has had a severe effect on them, and there have been clashes with police enforcing restrictions on people who can't get financial support if they don't work. And I should warn you that you might find some of Dan Damon's report distressing.
Sound from video shot last month in Romania. They show a Roma man being beaten on the soles of his feet by a policeman, standing nearby special forces in combat fatigues with rifles.
Some Roma men and teenagers were reported having a barbecue outside in the courtyard of one of their houses during the lockdown. At least six police officers in and out of uniform turn up, including special forces. They drag the people out of the house, handcuff them behind their back and line them up on the floor in a line.
Jonathan Lee is advocacy director for the European Roma Rights Centre based in Brussels.
The man at the end, you've got two officers holding him to the ground while another one whips the bare soles of his feet. And you can clearly hear his screams throughout the video.
The BBC can't fully verify the videos and has asked Romania's police to comment. So far, there's been no response to repeated requests. Jonathan Lee claims police are using coronavirus laws to act with impunity against Roma people.
The media, civil society, judicial systems are completely paralysed by the pandemic. So while no one is watching and witnesses are very easy to scare off, racist police officers have a rare opportunity during the lockdown to bully and brutalise Romani women, men and children with impunity.
Another video, this time from a TV station in Slovakia. Again, a violent arrest of a Roma man accused of breaking coronavirus regulations by not wearing a mask. A family member told Romea TV he couldn't get a mask, they weren't available, but he was still pushed to the ground and arrested. Michal Zalašák is the lawyer who's taken up the case.
The Roma communities in Slovakia, I think, are in more vulnerable position than compared to the majority of the societies. Many of them do not have access to drinking water. They can't care about themselves in terms of hygiene as much as majority population can. There are several obstacles also, like access to healthcare. They are poorer. So they are in a worse situation compared to the majority population.
In Serbia, further allegations of police overreaction to Roma leaving their homes because of the things they have to do to make money, what's called informal work like scavenging and waste collection. Andreja Čolak is a Roma rights lawyer in Belgrade.
Unlawful arrest, deprivation of liberty, use of violence and force. The case happened in informal settlement here in Belgrade. The guy was chopping woods in the middle of the night. He has a small baby. And what the police actually did is, on top of beating him and arresting him, they took him to the misdemeanor judge, who fined him with approximately 450 euros for violating police curfew. Police was abusing the powers they had under the state of emergency. He complained to the misdemeanor judge about the police violence that happened just a few hours before. His shirt was torn, so it was obvious that there were bloodstains. And the judge completely disregarded this.
The BBC has asked the authorities involved for official responses to these allegations.
Dan Damon reporting, and as we record this podcast, the BBC still haven't managed to get an official response. Still to come in this podcast.
Maria Branyas celebrated her 113th birthday in March. Her family must have thought they'd never see her again when she went down with coronavirus last month.
Spain's oldest woman has recovered from coronavirus. Now, as we heard in the earlier podcast, at least 28 people were killed in two militant attacks on Tuesday in Afghanistan. 16 died, babies, new mothers and nurses, as gunmen assaulted a hospital in the capital, Kabul, supported by the aid agency Médecins Sans Frontières, or Doctors Without Borders. The Afghan president, Ashraf Ghani, has ordered the country's security forces to switch from defence to attack after these events. Here's our chief international correspondent, Lise Doucette.
Shots rang out when three gunmen, dressed in police uniforms, stormed a busy hospital. A doctor told the BBC 140 staff were on duty, including three foreigners. Women were giving birth in the maternity clinic as the assault began. This woman and her baby were waiting for care.
I was here to get a new baby vaccinated. I was just sitting there, waiting. I didn't realise what was happening.
Special forces rescued the patients, including an infant who was rushed to an ambulance, swaddled in a blood-stained blanket. Many mothers and their newborn babies lost their lives. All the attackers were killed in gun battles which lasted several hours. In Afghanistan's brutal war, hospitals are dangerous front lines, even when the country is also fighting COVID-19. This hospital, run by the international charity Doctors Without Borders, is in a poor Kabul neighbourhood, where many from Afghanistan's Hazara community live, Shia Muslims who've often come under attack by the Islamic State group. The largest armed group, the Taliban, insist they weren't involved. But the Taliban have been intensifying their attacks in other parts of the country, in a year when Afghans were hoping there would be peace talks.
That was Lise Doucette reporting. And just before we came into the studio, the Islamic State group said it was behind the funeral attack. To Russia now, where a partial relaxation of the lockdown began on Tuesday, despite a continuing surge in new infections that's placed it in the worst three countries for coronavirus cases. President Putin says workers in construction, manufacturing and agriculture should return unless regional leaders judge it unsafe. Shops, bars and other businesses remain closed. From Moscow, Sarah Rainsford reports.
Russia has now begun easing its coronavirus restrictions, sending factory and construction workers back to their jobs. The timing has caused confusion because the number of COVID-19 cases being detected is still rising sharply every day. But officials have abruptly stopped talking of reaching a peak or plateauing. Instead, they say the high infection rate here is down to a big increase in testing, that almost half the cases being detected have no symptoms, and that hospitals, although they've been strained, are not overloaded. Russia's prime minister is already a patient in one of them, and now the Kremlin spokesman, Dmitry Peskov, has been admitted to hospital too. He says he hasn't been in direct contact with Vladimir Putin for more than a month, though. That's around the time that Russia's president retreated to work from his residence. A fire in a coronavirus hospital up in St. Petersburg killed five people after a ventilator short-circuited in the intensive care unit. It was the second such blaze in Russia in several days. The ventilators were new, produced in response to a rapid increase in demand to deal with the coronavirus pandemic.
That was Sarah Rainsford in Russia. Tuesday was International Nurses Day. Imagine being one of the millions of frontline health workers around the world who are putting their lives on the line during this present pandemic. The Focus on Africa programme asked its listeners to record messages for nurses working across the continent. Here are some of them.
My name is Anselm from Rwanda. My message to all nurses across Africa is that we are so, so proud of them because the job they are doing is a great job and it's amazing. So we are praying for them and we are supporting them by trying to avoid this virus to be spread. We love them. Stay safe and then look after all COVID-19 patients.
My name is Cynthia Mwangi from Kenya, Nairobi. For the heroic work you're doing under extreme conditions and times, you are putting your lives on the line for us. And for that, we thank you. We're here because you are on the front line. You're securing our future.
Hi, BBC. I just want to say a few words for our nurses and sisters. They are the real angels on earth. The world, hospital, and the world is incomplete without them. I salute them and may they get the highest condemnation of their life. Love from Mama Africa. Thank you.
Messages from BBC listeners in Africa to mark International Nurses Day. Qatar Airways says it's giving away 100,000 free return air tickets to health workers to thank them for their efforts during the virus pandemic. The airline called them heroes risking their lives for others. The complimentary flights offer is open to healthcare professionals all over the world. Countries will be allotted a certain number of tickets according to the size of their populations. A German man who's been living in an Indian airport terminal for almost 8 weeks has finally boarded a flight to Amsterdam. Our South Asia editor Jill McGivering takes up the story.
Edgard Zeebat flew into Delhi's international airport from Hanoi on March the 18th, expecting to board a flight to Istanbul a few hours later. But he arrived to find his flight and all the others had been cancelled. He became stranded, apparently denied permission to enter India. He also failed to take an emergency evacuation flight organised by the German authorities. The Indian media has compared him to the stranded passenger played by Tom Hanks in the film The Terminal. The Delhi airport authorities say they gave him food, toiletries and a recliner, and he spent his days reading and talking to friends by phone.
Jill McGivering. A law firm in New York, which represents some of the biggest names in entertainment, has been targeted in a cyber attack. The hackers say they've seized sensitive private files and will publish them if a ransom isn't paid. So, who has been targeted? Our cybersecurity reporter is Joe Tidy.
Well, the client list of this law firm is a real who's who. These are A-list stars. You've got people like Rod Stewart, Lil Nas X, Robert De Niro, Lady Gaga, Madonna, Bruce Springsteen. I could go on and on. I counted over 200 different personalities in the entertainment industry and also brands as well, like Spotify, Facebook. So if you're going to hack somebody, I suppose this would be a good target.
So what do we know about the people who are behind it then?
We know that they are a notorious ransomware gang. They're called Reval or Sodnikobi. We don't know where they are. We don't know who they are, of course, but we know they've taken down some pretty high profile targets in the past. In January, there was the attack on Travelex, the foreign currency company, and that took their websites down worldwide. And we don't know whether or not Travelex paid, but we know that they wanted millions from Travelex in order to get the data back. In this instance, we know that Reval have taken data. They are claiming they've taken more than 700 gigabytes of data. That's a lot of information. They say they've got contracts, non-disclosure agreements, personal emails between clients and the law firm from all these stars and companies. So there's a lot at stake here for the company, and the company is Grubman, Shire, Mizellis and Sachs. They're a New York-based firm. We know they have confirmed they've been hit by a cyber attack, but they're not saying the nature of the attack and whether or not they're negotiating.
And do we know what the hackers are planning to do with all this information if they don't get paid?
Well, they've published some of it. One of the things that we've noticed in the ransomware type world, ransomware, I should explain, is where you encrypt a company's system or data and you demand payment before you decrypt it or give it back to them. And what we're seeing lately is a lot of ransomware gangs are publishing a portion of the data they've stolen on the internet, either on the clear web or the dark web, to sort of prove that they've got what they say they've got. And we know that they've published a contract for Madonna. This is entitled her World Tour contract, which is signed by presumably someone who works for her and someone from Live Nation, the concert company. So we know they've got some stuff. We know it's very, very sensitive stuff. And they say if the company, if the law firm don't pay them, they'll publish the lot.
That was Joe Tidy. Video games are often criticised for their violent content, with some of the world's best-known titles urging us to fight wars, battle zombies, steal cars, or engage in other dubious activities. But now a new online game is aiming to save lives during the coronavirus pandemic. Can You Save the World has been developed by a psychology professor from the University of Hertfordshire in southern England to teach children about the importance of social distancing. The online game has been played more than 10,000 times since being released 3 days ago, and Rebecca Drought has had a go.
You must keep away from people in a busy street, avoid sneezes, and collect masks in order to save lives. This is a game, Can You Save the World? The man behind it, Professor Richard Wiseman, came up with the idea while on a walk during lockdown. Following social distancing rules gave him the feeling he was a character in a video game. And video games, he says, can change people's behaviour in the real world.
Hopefully it's lots of fun to play, but there's a strong educational message there for the whole family. Normally in computer games, you know, you're saving your own life, as it were. But here, when you avoid somebody, not only are you not getting infected and passing it on, they don't infect other people.
Professor Wiseman created the game in just 2 weeks with the French designer Martin Jacob. It's free, but currently only available on a computer via a web browser. The team have plans to make an app version for mobile devices, which should be available soon. Professor Wiseman hopes adding a bit of levity to a serious subject will help children learn by doing, and also by seeing their actions make a difference. A player's final score shows how many lives they've saved.
And that report was by Rebecca Drought. Now, some good news. Spain's oldest woman, Maria Brañas, has recovered from coronavirus at the age of 113. She fought the infection in isolation at the care home in the northeastern city of Olot, where she has lived for 2 decades. Here's our Europe editor, Mike Sanders.
Maria Brañas celebrated her 113th birthday in March, just before the pandemic took hold. Her family must have thought they'd never see her again when she went down with coronavirus last month. But after weeks in isolation, she recovered, having suffered only mild symptoms. She was born in San Francisco in 1907, the year after the great earthquake. She survived 2 world wars, a civil war, and the Spanish flu pandemic a century ago. Asked for the secret of her long life, she simply said she enjoyed good health.
That was Mike Sanders. And that's it from us for now, but there will be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. If you would like to comment on this podcast or just say hi, do please send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Jackie Leonard, and until next time, goodbye.